I would like to introduce our speaker this evening. He's my sponsor, and I do workshops, not workshops, but I do H&I, vice chair for H&I, and I take meetings up to the coast. So I'm getting pretty used to introducing speakers. But somebody asked me one time, we had a Q&A, and they asked me, how do you choose a sponsor? And it was kind of hard for me to try. It was hard for me to answer that because I don't know how I chose my sponsor. I really don't. I just knew I was told to choose a sponsor and just choose a sponsor. And you try to look for similarities. You try to see if, you know, you have something in common. If you come from the same hood. I didn't know how to choose it. But after a while, I thought about it. God chooses my sponsor. He chose my sponsor. I don't know about anybody else, but when you choose a sponsor and that person helps you out with your steps, helps you out with your recovery, and you stay clean, you always have to give thanks and gratitude for that. That's how I know God chose a sponsor for me. So I'm hoping you get something out of this message tonight. I'd like to introduce Charles Hay.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm an addict. My name is Charles.
Hey, Charles.
I'm not well.
Over here.
The people that know me know that already, but today I have a cold, so I'm probably going to blow my nose a few times up here. Something came to me in a meditation the other day. I was up here in 2005. I came up with Lance in the afternoon. He had a trailer behind his car, and we brought some wood up for this fire. And we were cleaning up. There's a hall in back of where we registered, and that they're turning into a bunkhouse now, so we don't use it now. But when we got here, they said that Bishop McCourt was in the field, and I was wondering what the bishop was doing here. Yeah, what was the bishop doing here? I was thinking, does he have his bishop clothes on? And, you know, it would be nice to go get blessed by the bishop. That's how clueless I was. Bishop McCord is in high school. So, at like 10 or 11 o'clock at night in that hall over there, Ron spoke. If you go to a regional event, he'll probably be here this weekend, I don't know. He's the guy with the most clean time. He has like 34 years now. And he spoke over there. And when he was done, I could feel the presence of God in that room. And I was down in the men's room in the middle of the night, like 2 o'clock in the morning, in one of the stalls. And I used to get high in a lot of men's room stalls. But I was so high at that moment, it was better than any of the drugs that I had ever done. So, you know, that's what this is about, sharing the love. And, you know, I hope I can give you a small part of what I got that night. You know, I have some experience as an addict. I was in an outpatient rehab in, like, 1991. I was on house arrest, and the house arrest guy came back. He was there, and he left, and he came back, and I was drinking. So it was either jail or do this outpatient rehab, and I did the outpatient rehab with a bracelet on. They were kind of surprised about that. And I did my chemical history. And when I was done, they said, you qualify. And that was before crack and heroin. You know? Alcohol did its best to kill me. Heroin took away everything that I cared about. And crack took away the rest. So I have some understanding of what an addict is. You know, I've discovered I have a fatal disease. This is not a moral dilemma. It tells you that in the basic text. This is a fatal disease. And it was my destiny in life to die when I was 25. And that did not happen. And it took me 25 years to figure that out. I had to keep coming back. But I went to a rehab when I was 25 years old. And stayed clean for a while. And then found some marijuana. And smoked some, and everything didn't fall apart, so I kept smoking it. And a couple years later, I noticed that my life was unmanageable, you know? I had a car that barely ran, I had a job and I had no money, and I was living with my parents. And other people didn't have a life like that. You know, I knew my life was unmanageable, and I knew it was because I was smoking dope. And I couldn't stop. So I went to see a counselor, and he told me I had to stop getting high. And he sent me to NA meetings. So I started going to NA meetings, but I couldn't stop getting high. So this guy told me, you know, you're in a lot of pain. And I had no clue what he was talking about. So I couldn't stop getting high, and he said, this is a waste of time, you might as well stop wasting the money. So I stopped going to see him, and I did a lot of drugs, and wound up in rehab again. And the guy that ran the rehab was in the program, and he gave us a basic text. And when I opened that book up and read the first step, it said, we admitted we were powerless over our addiction. You know, all that time that I had gone to those meetings trying to stop smoking marijuana, I would have sworn that it said we were powerless over drugs. But it said we were powerless over our addiction. I said, damn, that's me. You know, it's not the substance. You know, I could stop getting high if I really wanted to. I just don't want to. It's this addiction. What the hell is this addiction? So, you know, I got involved in a fellowship. And my sponsor was leaving town, so he introduced me. He said, I know somebody who would be a good sponsor for you. And the guy was at my home group, so my sponsor introduced me to this guy at my home group, who turned out to be the counselor when I couldn't stop smoking marijuana. So he's my sponsor today. He's got like 27 years clean. And he would tell me stuff, and I was totally clueless as to what he was talking about. You know, he'd say things like, if it bothers your spirit, don't do it. I had no idea what he was talking about. I distinctly remember walking away from him at our home group one night, and he said, you need to get a God. And I was like, what is he talking about? I got a God. You know, I did my third step prayer to a God of my misunderstanding. So he said, if you get in the center, you can't fall out. So I got in the center, I got heavily involved in service, and I stayed clean for 5 years. And then at the end of 5 years, my life was like fire all around me. Every aspect of my life was unmanageable. And I felt so bad that I wanted to die. And I figured, it's a fatal disease, and it's progressive, so if I get high, I should die. So I proceeded to get something. My sponsor said, call me before you take the first one. So I got the stuff and I called him up. I said, I'm going to get high. He said, don't do it. I said, I'm going to. And I did it. So, you know, I was able to take some direction, you know. I just was clueless as to what's going on here. So eventually I made it back. And what I came to understand is that my life is not about me. I'm not here to help myself. You know? When I was back in the rehab in 1980, my counselor said, you're very intelligent. That's going to be a major burden in your recovery. And she was right. I'm a master of deceit and manipulation. A master. And since I'm intelligent, I can rationalize anything. And rationalization is the use of intelligence to deny truth. So I was real good at denying truth. I was actually afraid of the truth. So I started not doing what I thought was right. You know, I started pursuing the path that God had placed me on. You know, I'm a deviant. God puts me on the path and I deviate. I go looking in the woods for something to make me happy. So this time I'm pursuing the path. And I've learned a lot. I was reading a book a couple weeks ago. You know, people ask me to help them, you know, in this process. And I tell them the truth. And then they get high and they go to prison. And I can't understand why? And I was reading in this book and it says that the truth cannot be defined. The truth cannot be explained. The truth can only be experienced from God. So that would explain why 20 years after my sponsor had said something to me, I'd be in Johnstown walking down the street, and I'd say, oh, that's what he meant. Because I wasn't ready for it when he said it. When he said, if it bothers your spirit, don't do it, I had no clue I had a spirit. You know? My ego was my guide, and my ego was insane. So my life was insane. You know, I was totally clueless as to what the spiritual realm was about. You know? They raised us wrong. You know? When I was a little kid, life was pretty cool. The first day of school was a madhouse, and it was a madhouse from that point on. And what I've come to understand is that my spirit did not want to be a part of that. And it says in the first step in the basic text that we have to be in it but not of it. You know, that's what I am today. I'm in it but not of it. You know, I get the impression that I've been graced with this disease which forces me to seek reality in order to stop suffering. You know, my life is not about me. I'm not supposed to stay clean and get a Hummer and a big screen TV. I'm supposed to help these people because they're all clueless too. The only reason that I have a clue is because I was forced by the pain to seek reality. I was forced to seek the truth. My sponsor used to say, seek the truth and seek God. And that was really difficult for me because I was afraid of the truth and I had a God of my misunderstanding. So one day I was in Johnstown and I was walking down the street and I said, well, I have nothing to lose. God, show me the truth. So I've learned a lot of shit that is disturbing, you know. They don't tell us the truth about a lot of stuff that goes on. But it's the truth. If I know the truth, then I have some framework to work from. So all I can do is keep coming back and doing what works. You know, at times life gets really difficult. But I know what works. As long as I pray and I talk to people in the program, I talk about how I feel, and I go to meetings, as long as I give it away, because you got to give it away to keep it, as long as I keep doing those things, I don't get high. And as long as I don't get high, my life improves. Now, it may go to shit tomorrow, but I was at the regional retreat one year. I was sitting with my sponsor during the main speaker. He was across the table from me. And after the speaker, we met up with his sponsor. And we were walking across the lawn. There were like 10 of us in this group. And somebody asked his sponsor what he was going to do the next day. He said, we're going to go back to the hotel. I'm going to try not to take anything for the next 3 hours. And if I wake up in the morning, I'll take it from there. So on Sunday morning, I got up and went down to see the spiritual speaker, and it was him. You know, that struck me. That's how he lives his life. He says he gets up in the morning, asks for help to stay clean for the day, goes about his business. If he runs into a problem, he does his best to work his way around it. At the end of the day, he thanks God. So that's how I try to live my life. So these people come to me, and, you know, they kind of want what I have, but they, like, won't stop getting high. They think marijuana is not a drug. You know, I was writing to a guy in jail, and we were writing some really serious stuff. This was over the course of several months, and it got really... It was profound, some of this stuff that we were writing. And he got out, and I met him, and we took his walk down the street, and it was obvious that he was not going to stay clean because he knew all these people on the street. He knew them from jail. And so he came and stayed with me. And he was doing good, you know, going to meetings. And he didn't have any of his stuff. It was at his mother's house, and he had to So we negotiated. He didn't have a license, so he couldn't get a job. So we negotiated the release of some of his stuff, and we went and got the stuff and came home. And one of the things was his cell phone. And he was standing in my living room, staring at the numbers in the cell phone. And I said, they were his girlfriends. I said, you might want to erase them. And he didn't do it. He regained his identity. And the feelings came, and he couldn't handle it, so he took the first one. I think he's in jail right now. He's been in and out over the course of several years. But I noticed, you know, he regained his identity. You know, I have this identity, this person that I thought I was supposed to be. You know, the person that they told me I was supposed to be in school, the person I was always trying to be. But I could never be that person because it was an illusion. It was a fantasy. You know, when I finally was able to surrender in 2004, I could stop trying to be that person. You know, I could be the person I am. I've been given a lot of gifts. And just being the person I am is good enough. My reality is sufficient. You know? If you have $2 in your pocket, you have more money than 80% of the people in the world. You know? But I have this sense of lack because they taught me all wrong. So I have to unlearn what I've learned. I think it's Zen. I went to see Return of the Sith one day. It was a Sunday. I took the bus up in Johnstown, and the buses stopped running at 3 o'clock. I didn't know about that. So I could have called somebody to give me a ride, but I figured I'd walk home. So I was walking home, and I decided it would be a good goal to be a Jedi Knight when I grow up. I was like 51 years old at the time. So you see, I got the Force right here. It's a theme in my life. But who's the guy? Lucas. Lucas was friends with Joseph Campbell, and Joseph Campbell studied myth. He studied different religions, different myths. So a lot of that stuff in that movie is like Zen. You know? You must unlearn all that you have learned. I was just reading that I just read a book on the Buddhist practice, and it was in there. You know, I have to unlearn all that I've learned. That's the way to gain power. You know, this is not about me, but I want to be able to help as many people as I can. So I have to let go of that identity that I still have. I know I still have this identity. And it causes me problems. You know, you would think after 5 years that the behaviors would start working, you know? But they don't. There was a speaker at Start to Live on Friday night a couple years ago, and he was saying that he felt some kind of way because they cut off his credit card. You know, he had been through, like, sex and gambling and money and masturbation and all this stuff, and he found that he was getting up at 1 o'clock in the morning when his wife was asleep and going out to buy stuff on his credit card just to change the way he felt. And they cut off his card. He had like 14 years clean. So it doesn't go away, you know? We keep thinking that the behavior is going to start working, and it doesn't work. So I know from experience that if I take any mind or mood-altering substance, it's going to release the addiction all over again, and my life is going to become unmanageable, and it's going to become progressively unmanageable until there's nothing left. You know, when I made it back into rehab the last time, I had a screwdriver, which I used to break into the abandoned house I was in, a cell phone, which I needed to call the dope man, and a pair of pliers. And an umbrella. I had that umbrella for years. Somebody stole the pliers in the halfway house. And I still have the screwdriver. And when I was in rehab, I had to get some numbers off the cell phone, and it was in my luggage, in the storage. So one of the techs went in with me, and I was having trouble remembering how to get into the phone. So she helped me out. I gave her the access code, and I got the numbers. And when I left her holding the cell phone. She changed the access code. So I couldn't get the dope man's number when I got out. So I still have that phone, and I can't get into it. So I don't want to go back to what that was. And I don't know what's going to happen if I do what these people tell me. But I want what they have. So I have to act on faith. You know, I used to think I made free will decisions. But what I've come to understand is that I was acting on what I knew. I was acting on what I knew from the past. And what I kept getting was the past. So in order to use free will, I have to act on faith. That if I do this stuff, it'll work for me. You know, I started meditating a couple years ago, and my perception of reality has changed dramatically. You know, there are times when I get feelings that are so good. You know, a couple years ago, I was telling people this can't possibly be legal. You know, I go to work, you know, I work far away from home, 30 miles away, and they don't pay me a lot of money. So when they offered me the job, I was thinking it would be insane to take this job. So I can't be there for the money. I have to be there to help. So I do my best to help. And, you know, there's a joy in my life now. And I'm able to share that with people. And these people just don't get it. They really think that we smoke marijuana on these retreats. They can't conceive that anybody could be this happy and not be taking some. But it's true. So, you know, I have a responsibility to pursue this path, to share it with as many people as I can. And it's an honor. It's an absolute honor to be a part of this process. You know, at the end of this thing on Sunday morning, you stick around, you'll feel so good. You'll want to keep coming back. I think I'm done. Thank you.
Good job, John.
I'd like to thank Charles for speaking on Who is an Addict. Those of us who know him, know him. And like I said, I don't know why I chose him as a sponsor. Only God knows. Can we have at the podium? We just for today. Oh, I'm sorry. You're exactly right about that. That's why I got him as a sponsor. That's why. We're going to open this up. I guess we got another. Oh, we got plenty of time. We got at least another half an hour. I'd like to open it up. Open up a discussion about what Charles spoke on, or what do we think, or how do we determine, how do we know who is an addict and how does it reflect in our lives? Anybody like to start? My name is Leonard. I'm still an addict. When I think about who is an addict, when I first read it, I had problems in my life admitting that I was an addict, alcoholic, or anything. I spent 18 years trying to rationalize, trying to intelligently try to make myself believe I'm not an addict, I'm just not getting high the right way. And through my different, managerial skills, maybe I'll become a dealer, maybe I'll just buy a 50, maybe I'll just drink a half a pint, maybe I'll just get high at the end of the night, maybe I'll just get high at 12 o'clock. There's so many different things I tried to make myself understand or not come to believe that I was an addict. Until I admitted or I surrendered to the point that my life was so unmanageable where I couldn't think about nothing except I knew the phone was going to ring, and I knew that any particular time, I knew during the day, dude, nothing I could do was going to happen except I was going to get high that day. And I started dreading that idea. I started getting to the point where I couldn't remember how to make money. I couldn't remember how to do anything. I mean, I loved being a weekend athlete. I couldn't do that because I didn't have the desire to do it. I didn't have the desire to, I mean, I got up, I cleaned myself, and I'd wash my clothes, and I would eat. But even when I was eating, you know, all the things that I've said I wasn't, I was, but I didn't realize it. So until I came to a complete stop, I mean, there was a point in time when I had to walk down the street, and I felt the only thing that was left for me was death. I could be dead sober walking down the street, and I felt like somebody was going to blow my brains out. And I just knew if I waited on that phone call long enough, I was going to get high. So for me to come to the understanding that I was an addict, it took a while, even through the process of my recovery. When I first surrendered, I admitted it wholeheartedly that I am an addict because the way I'm living cannot be the way you're supposed to live. And I knew better. I knew this is not how I'm supposed to be living. I knew I'm not supposed to be waking up thinking of a way to get high and going to bed wanting to get high the next day. That was not normal life for me. You know, not being able to work, not being able to figure out where my next dollar was coming up unless somebody gave it to me for a small job I did, but that money was going towards getting high. So the idea of me being an addict was something that took me 18 years to admit. Because I spent 18 years saying, you know what, I'm not an addict. I just get high a little bit. I had a group of people we used to hang with, and we used to call the people that came to her son's house, the cops. They were cracking, but we were just smokers. You know, that was the part of, that was the addict I was. We're just smokers. We're just going to smoke and smoke and smoke, but we're cool because we can sit here and we don't have to do this and that. But that's a crackhead over there. See how they come here every day to get high? And we're steady puffing and saying the same thing. I remember we were sitting in my truck one day, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and I don't know if we were sick and tired at the same time, but we both sat there, and when the woods turned purple, we both looked at each other and said, did the woods just turn purple? And she looked at me and said, I think so. I told her, I said, I believe they did, you know. Have we had enough yet? No, not yet. It's only 5 o'clock in the morning. We got to wait for Terry to go to sleep. I mean, he's not around anymore, but we got to wait for him to go to sleep so we can finish doing what we're doing. There's too many times in my life when I would sit there and I'd wonder, what the hell was I doing? But I couldn't stop. And when I come to that realization, when I come to that point after I surrendered, when I finally went to my last rehab, my last run, I started sitting back and thinking, I've been an addict for so long, I really didn't know what it meant. Till through this process, through the program, through the fellowship, through the readings, you know, through my sponsor, and the things I'm learning on a daily basis, I am truly an addict. That's why when I introduce myself, I say, look, I'm still an addict. One drink, I'm one beer away from going back to where I was. One beer away from that being, it's all over. It's a wrap. It's done. To me, that's what my addict, that's what my addiction tells me. That's what I learned about myself today. That's all I got.
Thank you, Sharon.
Anybody else like to share on who is an addict? Okay, I guess we have no addicts in the group. Alrighty. Alright, if no one else wants to share, we have just for today.
I'm Sandy, and I am an addict.
Hey, Sandy.
Just for today, tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program. I will try to follow it to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using, and will find a new way of life. So long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear.
Thanks, man. We have a beautiful way of closing.